The ground shakes as thousands march towards the Holy Land. Proudly they walk towards the city gates, banner in hand and brothers in arms. This rowdy crowd is in high spirits, triumphant over Arsuf, Antioch, and Tripoli. The Mamluk army is ready to lay yet another attack on their Christian rivals, the last bastion of Christianity, the city of Acre. The year is 1291 AD. Standing alone is Acre, hosting the Teutonic Knights, Templar Knights, and the Knights Hospitalliers. Altogether, they would amount up to 16,000 foot soldiers and 1,000 on cavalry. 17,000 strong to defend one city. Must surely be enough, right? No, not nearly. The Mamluk Sultan arrives on April 6th at the city gates with a force of 80,000 men, consisting of 20,000 on horseback and 60,000 infantry. The last Christians standing were heavily outnumbered. So in the face of such unfavorable odds, what should one do? Accept their fate? Or understand that we fight till the last man stands? Only 2 days after the army arrived, 100 catapults would make their way to the Mamluks' army. They are ready to begin. For 7 straight days, the Mamluks rained fire over the Crusaders, but as they fought with light, the knights would attack under the cover of darkness. On April 15th, a series of night raids would begin, a moment where the heavily outnumbered Christians would have to fight smart. But the worst was yet to come. On May 18th, 1291, the Mamluks raise hell and the major assault unfolds. There are 3 main gates into the city: the North Gate, the Gate of St. Anthony, and the East Gate. The North is defended by the Templars, who will go head-to-head against Emir al-Muzaffar, in charge of the Ayyubid Emirate of Hama. St. Anthony's Gate is defended by the Knights Hospitalier, whose prayers overcome the murmurs of Commander Al-Malik. The Teutonic Knights, they hold strongly the East Gate, ready to take on the full force of Mamluk Sultan Khalil al-Ashraf. The advance commences, and whilst numbers are grand on the enemy's side, they all have to go through a narrow entrance. The defenders hold the fort briefly, but soon enough they all have to start retreating. Chants of war turn into cries of disaster. Templar Grandmaster Guillaume de Bougeon is wounded. In a state of chaos, even his army calls him a coward as he retreats. Yet the Grandmaster raises his hand and reveals his wound. "I am not fleeing, I am dead. Here is the wound." Famous last words indeed, as he passes away shortly after. The Mamluks make their way through the city gates as the Christians split up. Many head over to the ports as they try to make their escape. While some manage, most of the refugees who sought shelter in the castle of Acre, their fate would not be as kind. They try to negotiate, but the Mamluks pay no heed to their acts of negotiations and cold-heartedly storm the fortress, laying waste to all they encounter. The last bastion of Christianity in the Levant falls. Thousands of Christians watered the soil with their blood. Christian monuments turned to dust as catapults rained fire and stone. All seemed to be lost, all but one. The famed house of the hard-working carpenter named Joseph and a beautifully pure mother, whom we all know as Mary. The house, which would have been lost to the enemies, had an army of angels led by Archangel Gabriel not intervened. The famous living quarters of the Holy Family, known till this day as the Holy House of Loreto.
Mm-hmm.
Friends, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. This is Jeremy Gregg here to deliver another exciting, informative, and historical episode of Caro Caravaggio, a series where we visualize the masterpieces of Master Merisi da Caravaggio, and a space where we dive into the historical background and inspirations of these paintings. We're obviously here on Campus 103.7. Now, in last week's episode, I did say that we are going to talk about the death of a virgin. Well, we made a wee bit of a mistake there, and that is actually episode 8 and not 7. So, soon, today is a little bit different, bear with me. At today's opening, ever so dramatically, we introduce the Last Crusade, which took place in the year 1291, where the final Christian strongholds would fall. This would have been the crusade which causes the home of Mother Mary to be lifted into the sky and taken to Loreto, Italy. An episode which inspires Caravaggio to nail Our Lady of the Pilgrims. But wait, why Loreto in Italy, of all places? Well, have you seen the Marche region? Truly is divine. But look, while miracles might not always allow us to obtain certain detail, let this nerd find some historical background which might help us actually solve these mysteries. But all in due time, my fellow listeners, first we have to tackle this oil on canvas, a commission which arrived in at the height of Caravaggio's career, where his walk to the top turned into a meteoric run up that artistic hill.
Thank you.
And that was Running Up That Hill by Kate Bush, setting the mood for today's episode. And we are already on episode 7. How did we even get here? Well, by spending all-nighters staring at paintings, hours writing these scripts, and countless recording sessions to bring you these stories. All thanks to the wonderful team of creatives here at Campus 103.7, who allow me some time to blab and nerd out with all of you. But let's get to it. Today's artwork is called Madonna di Loreto, painted by Caravaggio for the private chapel of Ermete Cavalletti, a member of the confraternity of the Holy Trinity of Pilgrims. That was a mouthful. Who obviously wanted the Lady of Loreto to take on the central stage due to the thousands of pilgrims that flood Loreto every year to visit the Holy House. As you must have guessed, another oil on canvas here, standing this time at 260 centimeters in height and 150 centimeters in width. Where can one see this masterpiece? Well, it was originally placed in the chapel of Cavalletti on the left-hand side, just as soon as you enter the St. Augustine Church in Rome. And my, oh my, what an experience. Just a couple of months ago, I was there on a small project. Now, the church was mostly under construction, or rather restoration at the time, and as soon as we headed in to shoot a quick video of the Madonna di Loreto, there we see an incredible sight. Two nuns actually looking at the painting, so the scene was already quite astonishing, but as soon as we got close to them, they were doing the same thing that we were, taking photos with their new phones, which looked a little bit interesting with these nuns. But anyway, now this fairly rectangular painting hosts four characters, the protagonists being Mother Mary and baby Jesus, supported by two pilgrims on their knees. So, let's get to it. When it comes to this painting, as per usual, the light is going to come in from the top left-hand side. Now, the painting is going to be cut into two sections, one part on the left-hand side, mostly depicting the Blessed Virgin and baby Jesus, and on the right, the bottom side, we have two pilgrims kneeling down. And how is it composed? So, at the top left-hand side, we have some darkness, which then reveals the beautiful face of the Blessed Virgin Mary. The Blessed Virgin Mary seems to be tilted in a contrapasso position, leaning down to the pilgrims, which we will be getting to very, very soon. Her neck is fully exposed, lit up by the famous signature rite of Caravaggio. Her hair seems to be braided and put up quite nicely. If you truly focus above her ear, you will also notice some ribbons keeping the hair together. A beautiful halo now surrounds the Virgin's head. The Virgin is wearing some interesting clothes. Depending on which paintings to look at, some reveal a bit more of a violet color, others a more bluish color. This can depend on the quality of the photos. Now, we do believe, since this is the Blessed Virgin Mary, she would be wearing the royal blue. With that, this lady is holding a rather oversized baby Christ, which wouldn't be all too common at the time, but this is here. Perhaps it shows you that it is the passion, the love of how big the Lord is in the hands of Mary, sharing the passion with the pilgrims. Christ takes up most of the body of Mary as she lifts him up gently, covered only slightly by a piece of drapery, white linen as it seems, which is covering a little bit of Christ. Mary tilts, and with Christ she holds him gently. Baby Jesus, with his soft hair and blondish gaze, also has a fine halo over his head. Separated between the Blessed Virgin and Christ, we have a small doorframe. The doorframe is right in the middle of the painting. It shows us the division and the split almost throughout the divinity and the local people. It also shows you an interesting element where inside the house, the doorframe towards Mary and Christ to the left, it is relatively sharp and new. If we then look at the plastering and the construction on the right-hand side, which is mostly the top right of the painting, where we just have the wall, we see a blank space. But this blank space shows us some history too. Even though it is plastered, a little bit seems to be damaged, revealing some bricks into this wall, alluding to the original architecture and the style of the house of Loreto. So this here is an indication that they have seen the house, they have been there, and they are telling you this is the real authentic one. Perhaps some controversy might be coming in, showing the house of Mary and Christ so revealed, but let's not also forget that this is now on the pilgrim side and not on the holy side. So where are these pilgrims? We go to the bottom half of the painting, which shows us now the feet of the Blessed Virgin and baby Jesus. Here it shows you the humanity coming close to us. Mary is not depicted wearing any shoes. She is barefoot. It shows you that she is one of us, an element of humility. The two pilgrims bow down, wearing very ragged and poor clothes, and there we can see two. Right in the middle, closest to us, we have a man with a little bit of shaggy hair. His ear is fully exposed and his left eye is lightly illuminated. His hands are in a praying position, but not fully flexed, about to stretch into that flex. He wears a bit of a cape, or rather a hood, and is supported by the typical pilgrim's cane. As he is on his knees, we can notice that his legs are almost bare from the calf down, and his feet are all dirtied up. A symbol of poverty, perhaps, but let's not forget, pilgrims also do a lot and a lot of walking. His feet are not going to be as clean. On the right-hand side, then, we have an old lady. We can also see the left part of her face fully revealed and illuminated by the famous light of Caravaggio. On her head, she wears white linen, a sort of scarf to cover her up, very similar to what we had seen in other paintings, mainly Judith beheading Holofernes on the Maid, which, when we look at this face, it is also a little bit similar. We can notice, as soon as we go into the detail of the old lady's face, all of the wrinkles that reveal her age. Her hands, just like that of her companion, are in a prayer position, but still not fully flexed. A moment frozen in time, just when these two pilgrims are about to say prayer to the Blessed Virgin. This is the beauty of the moment, and one feature which I would really like you to take a look at is the feet of the Blessed Virgin. As we go further down to the painting on the bottom left-hand side, we can see the feet of the Virgin that are also twisted, as if the Virgin is about to welcome them into her house. This is very important. The message of the religion, the humility of the Blessed Virgin that tells you, I will welcome you just like you have welcomed me into your life. And that is what all pilgrims would actually seek on such a long journey. Being a pilgrim wasn't going to be easy. You are going to give up everything that you own, and you will walk and walk and walk for hours throughout some very dangerous roads, where you will also encounter some troublesome bandits, and food is going to be a big issue also. So it's not going to be easy to be a pilgrim, and I would wonder, how does it feel to walk in their footsteps?
Say about the things that put me through, the pain I've been subjected to, but the Lord himself forward blush. The countless beasts laid at my feet, forbidden fruits for me to eat, but I think your pulse would start to rush. And now I'm not looking for absolution, forgiveness for the things I do. Try walking in my shoes. try walking in my shoes. Yes, stop running my footsteps. Keep the same appointments I get. If you try walking in my shoes. If you try walking in my shoes. Would frown upon, decency would down upon, the scapegoat fate's made of me. But I promise now, my judge of jurors, my intentions couldn't have been purer. My case is easy to see. I'm not looking for a clearer conscience, peace of mind after what I've been through. Before we talk of any repentance, try walking in my shoes. Try walking in my shoes. You're stumbling in my footsteps. Keep the same appointments I get. If you try walking in my shoes. If you try walking in
Welcome back to Campus 103.7 with your host, Jeremy Gregg, for Caro Caravaggio, where with the power of imagination and our minds, we visualize the paintings of the maestro. The Madonna di Loreto is a top-tier painting, in my opinion. The topic is very well known, but the history might be messy in some places. I mean, a house that flew halfway across a continent carried by angels might sound like a myth, but what if I told you that there might be some historical backing to it? How? Okay. Let's use the last few minutes to discuss this. It is at the same period of the fall of Acre, which we started and opened our episode with, where a document dating to 1294 details the dowry of Itamar Angeli, given to Philip II of Anjou, which reveals some very interesting information. Now, in this dowry is a list of countless goods, but what stands out is the holy stones carried from the house of Mary. Wait, didn't we say that it was angels who carried the house over the mountains and over to Italy? Well, we might not be too off. The dowry belonged to the Angeli family. See the resemblance, angels, Angeli. But what other theories do we have to truly factualize all of this? While the house points out to have actually come from Israel due to matching sediments and architectural features, according to historians such as Father Giuseppe Santarelli, archaeologists also have found a coin which was laid in the foundations of the house upon being placed back together, typical of the time. Coins were used to indicate provenance. As for the name, well, before the house got there, apparently it stayed for a while in a forest owned by a certain Loretta, so this could have actually come from there as well. Whether it is a miracle or an historic episode, there is no denying that this painting is truly a feast for the eyes. Another great artwork by the promising Caravaggio, and all seems to be going well so far in the timeline, but soon, oh my, trouble brews, eyes roll, reviews come out and scandals ensue. What kind of scandals? Well, you will get to know on the next episode of Caro Caravaggio on Campus 103.7. But in the meantime, my dear friends, Romans and countrymen, I hope you have a brilliant day.